Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Dow Automotive Systems, innovations for clean powertrain solutions.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 87 for Thursday, January 20th, 2011. Buongiorno from Auburn Hills. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autolinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. So, buongiorno, Mr. DeLorenzo.
Buongiorno, Gianni.
So, we're not in the studio tonight. We're deep inside of Chrysler in Auburn Hills.
The inner sanctum.
And we'll have Joe Veltri, who heads up all product development for Chrysler, coming on the show later. But we've got a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do.
But wait, hold on a second, because I want to announce to everybody that next week we're going to be webcasting live from the Washington Auto Show. We're also going to do after hours there, but we've been given free tickets to get into the Washington Show. So if you live in the Washington area, or if you have friends that live there, we're going to be giving away free tickets. We're going to do it on Autoline Daily, but there's a trick. You have to be able to write in and say what color shirt I'm wearing for Tuesday's Auto Line Daily. What's the date on that? January 25th. So watch Auto Line Daily, January 25th. If you can write in and say what color shirt I have, you can have free tickets. We got a bunch of them, too, to the Washington Auto Show. But anyway, let's get back to what's going on right now, because GM dropped a bombshell today, I thought. Well, two. One yesterday announcing Tom Stevens, who had been running product development, is going to sort of move into this new job. But the big shocker is this woman named Mary Barra coming in, who had been in human resources for the company, global human resources, now running PD, product development. Peter, what do you make of this?
Well, on the surface, as we well know, this industry is been underutilizing and underpromoting women forever.
For a long time.
And there are many, many capable women in this business. I've worked with, you've worked with, we know them. So on that level, it's a very nice thing. But that's not why she got promoted. She got promoted because Lieutenant Dan, that's CEO Dan Ackerson, to those of you out there who don't know my reference, Lieutenant Dan is trying to put his mark on this company. And we haven't had one of these instant automotive experts in this business for quite a while. I mean, the last one was kind of a two-headed monster in John Smale and Ron Zarella. Mm-hmm. And we haven't had the likes of Lieutenant Dan in a while. And he's hell-bent on putting his stamp on this company. He is an instant expert and a damn good one, just ask him. And the thing is, he was getting pushback from product development because he makes reactionary pronouncements. A little bit of knowledge goes a long way, and it is a dangerous thing. Like just saying, take $10,000 of costs out of the vault
right
now. And as Joe Veltri would attest, you don't say that in a meeting when the entire vault program was accelerated, and if they could take one penny of costs out of it, they would have. And so I think, no disrespect to Mary, I hear she's an outstanding manager, but I really think Ackerson has put her in this role to do what she's told and execute what he wants. He doesn't want the white noise. He knows what he wants, and ultimately he knows better for General Motors right now than any other human on the planet. So that's my take on it, and I'm going to have plenty more to say in next week's column about it.
I can't wait to read that one then. My question about it is not her capabilities. She seems extremely bright. She's way smarter than I am, I'm sure.
No. Mary's very bright.
And even though she's out of global human resources right now, her real background is in manufacturing and manufacturing engineering, and you really got to know about how you put a car together. So that helps from a PD standpoint. I don't know her enough, though, to say, does she really have a good gut feel for what makes great product? Because I think that the best PD people in the business have got that gut feel. It's not just a process that you go through.
No.
There's a little bit of magic to it.
There's a lot of magic to it, and you do have to have a gut. And what's one of the all-time phrases in this business that is true today as it always was? You cannot cut your way to prosperity. Lieutenant Dan doesn't know that yet because he hasn't been around this business long enough to know you cannot cut your way to prosperity.
Quite the opposite, in fact. Remember what Lutz was telling us 2 weeks ago of how they spent more money on the cars, but the cars were perceived better, and so they were able to raise the price significantly higher.
But one thing, Ackerson made a comment to the Wall Street Journal right before the Detroit Auto Show, and he said he couldn't understand why they had all these sheet metal variations among all these models when, you know, they could cut a bunch of costs by not making them that different.
Uh-oh.
And then just fix it in marketing.
This is Roger Smith all over.
Well, it's the Smail Zarella era all over again. And I got to tell you, GM, you know, they've got some good products on the ground. They've got some good products coming. But if someone doesn't get to Ackerson and like, give them a tutorial quickly, 3-4 years from now, GM is going to be suffering from the decisions being made right now.
No, that's right, because, as you say, they've got some pretty good product right now. Sales are starting to pick up for the core brands that they're keeping. And that's the big question mark in my mind. What's the second wave of products post-Lutz that really come out of the company, and can they keep that kind of momentum going?
Yeah. I mean, this is huge. I don't think people really realize. And if I'm the Wall Street boys, you know, if I'm one of those guys, I'm you know, they need to pay attention, because right now is when these guys really need to pay attention to what's going on at General Motors, because it could easily not go very well.
I see this, too, as Ackerson really putting a stamp on the company, because, you know, a week ago or so, they moved Chris Preuss out of OnStar, and he promoted another woman. Of course, she's got tremendous background, too, but it's like, this is his way of saying, look, now I'm going to start making this company look more like,
well,
I did this.
Yeah,
I'm in charge. Right.
So it's a very precarious period right now for General Motors. They're really serious.
So what else have you noticed going on this week?
Well, we have a new governor.
Yeah, right. We in Michigan like that. I don't know if anybody else outside
no
the state
one else
really
cares. I miss the State of the Union.
Yeah.
And you drove Chrysler products, so we'll be talking about that.
Yeah,
soon.
When we get Joe Veltri up here. Actually, there's an embargo on until the end of next week because they're doing multiple waves of journalists.
Oh, right. You drove some cars out west.
Yeah. Well, I can say exactly what I drove, and we can even talk what they're like. Yeah, but the Cinquecento, which was pretty cool. This was the U.S. spec one. Fiat 500 drove both automatic and manual. They've got 3 trim levels, drove all 3 of them. Fun little car, but the really impressive one was the new 300. That car is awesome, really good. And we also drove the Chrysler 200 convertible, and I'm not impressed.
Well, the 200's the 200, and maybe we don't talk about that so much.
Yeah, let's talk about the bigger number.
What else is going on in the business?
Well, the Detroit News had an interesting article suggesting that the UAW is probably going to pick Toyota as the target to go after to organize all these transplants. And, you know, here's my prediction that, you know, the union's saying, okay, they've got to be, what do they call it, fair and something, fair and open elections. And so as long as management doesn't interfere, you know, if the workers don't want it, they'll say, okay, we'll shake your hand and we'll walk away if the workers don't want a union. But I don't believe for a second that's how it's going to go down.
Oh, I don't believe for a second, and I've been writing about this for a while, but, you know, I think Bob King speaks with forked tongue, and I think, you know, we could very well be back in the same old crap that we've been in. I mean, the UAW either accepts this, you know, bonus pay situation, mm-hmm. but if...
Getting paid out of profits,
right,
in other words.
But if King veers into less work and more pay, the classic UAW mantra, this business will be set back immediately.
Well, I think what they're going to do is if management at the transplants doesn't do everything the way the union wants it, then the union's going to say, oh, you guys are human rights violators.
And that's just such horseshit.
Right. But anyway, we'll see if they pick Toyota, but it sure would make sense to pick Toyota as the target. It's the most vulnerable.
Yeah, and it's not as incendiary. It's just like, oh, you're going after an American car company after the American auto industry almost went down? No. So they're going after Toyota.
Yeah. So what else? I've been so tied up in all these... this press launch of the cars that I've sort of lost track of everything else that was going on this week.
Well, let's see. I did an aftermath of the Detroit Auto Show column, and I talked about, you know, the more you really dive into Volkswagen suggesting they're going to sell 800,000 vehicles here by 2018, the worse it gets. I mean, I just don't know.
Well, in fact, I had somebody suggest to me that the reason that Stefan Jacoby left Volkswagen is he knew there's no way I'm ever going to hit these numbers.
Well, and I kind of delved into the Germanic automotive executive mindset, which is a very unique thing. I tried to explain to the readers that, you know, they are unlike any other auto executive on the planet. Mm-hmm. They are... they've forgotten more than anybody else will ever learn. They, you know, if they set a target, that's it. And they're going hell-bent for that. And anyone who, you know, waves a little slight discouraging question is jettisoned to Siberia. And, you know, and it's just... it exudes arrogance, the Germanic automotive executive mindset. It's just unbelievable. So, you know, for Volkswagen to say, well, yeah, we're going to sell 800,000 vehicles in the U.S. market by 2018. And as you pointed out, they didn't even outsell Subaru.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
In 2010.
Right.
So it's like going, it's like a sales pace of a funny car.
Right. Yeah, I don't see it happening. And the danger, of course, is that you try to become such a low common denominator that you lose what the brand stood for, so you lose your core buyers.
Well, some of the blind Volkswagen loyalists are saying the new Jetta and the new Passat are exactly what Volkswagen's about. Simple, honest vehicles that don't cost a lot of money. That's fine if it's 1962. But when the Beetle, you know, when right. we saw the famous ad with the funeral, the guy at the, remember that ad?
No.
That was one of the all-time.
What was it?
Joe Dane Birnbach. You see this funeral procession, and you see this older guy with two babes, one on each arm in one car, and he's thinking he's going to get all of his brother's money. And then you hear the announcer and blah, blah, blah saying things. Then the last guy in the funeral procession is driving a Beetle. And you hear the reading of the will, and I leave my entire fortune of $100 million to my nephew, who always knew the value of a buck.
Now that you describe the whole thing, I do remember that. But, man, I haven't seen that in...
Yeah, I'll never forget that.
Long time.
It's classic. But, you know, it's not... to say that, oh, well, yeah, Volkswagen's on the right track. This is what they do. The Passat's this simple, honest vehicle, no pretense. Jetta's the same. You guys are missing it. Doesn't matter. This is what the Volkswagen brand has always represented. And, you know, I'm sorry. No, the Volkswagen brand represented a way into the German performance driving culture for not a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, they moved beyond the simplicity of the Beatle, and they went into the German. It was a way for enthusiasts to get at this enthusiast Germanic road car feel, you know, when they couldn't afford a BMW or Porsche.
Right.
And so when they do this lowest common denominator stuff, it's so cynical, and it's so, you know, it's just really...
Well, you got to wonder if it's going to work. You know, when you say our number one goal is to be number one, instead of saying our number one goal is to build great cars and delight our customers, it tends not to work.
It never goes well, yeah. Toyota learned the hard way.
Boy, did they. Hey, let's do
our
one of our commercial breaks and then bring in Joe Veltri here. But let's talk about the Chevrolet Cruze. You can check it out at Chevrolet.com/Cruze. And it's got some pretty good features. 6-speed manual transmission or automatic. Pioneer Premium 9-speaker sound system. More passenger and cargo room than the Civic, Corolla, or Focus. Gets better highway manual transmission fuel economy than Civic, Corolla, or Focus.
86 miles per gallon? Wow, I didn't know that. Oh, I read that wrong. I was reading over your shoulder.
Right. It's good. It's a 26 city, 36 highway.
Yeah, that's good.
But that's not quite 86. And again, you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/Cruze, and that's Cruze.
Just kidding.
And so this is great. Now sitting down with us here is Joe Veltri, who's the head of all product development for the Chrysler Group. And Joe, great to have you here
with Peter and I for After Hours.
Welcome.
So
we want you to take $10,000 of costs out of the 300.
Yeah. No, out of the 500.
Out of the 500. And you got 5 months.
Yeah, right. Need a rabbit in a hat.
Yeah.
Right. I'm all set.
Ace up your sleeve and a Derringer in your belt buckle.
I think those days for Chrysler of stripping content out of cars is over.
Good to hear.
We're so much different in that mindset now. It's being customer focused. I think you've seen our products now that it's really going back to what we used to know how to do, building great cars and trucks that people want to buy, and so it's fun again.
You know what I want to know is you guys are coming out with 16 new models, you know, roughly in a year's time. You know, the Grand Cherokee's already out in the showrooms right now. I think the Durango's hitting the showrooms now, too.
You know, they're all in production.
So before the year's out, 16 new models. Mm-hmm. I've never seen any car company in the history of the industry ever come out with so many models all at once. Mm-hmm. A company that a year and a half ago was in bankruptcy, and before that wasn't treated very well by the prior owners who, you know, were total slash-and-burn idiots. So I'm just curious, how do you come out with 16 new models all at the same time? And, I mean, how do you get all these engineering teams to work with such thin resources that you had?
I got that question a lot last week at the auto show, and the answer is really quite simple. When you start with a pretty firm mission, we were starting from a low point. And we knew in order to be competitive again, we had to move the needle significantly. And it wasn't just a couple products. It was several, the 16 you're referring to. The only way that, John, we were able to get that done in that period of time is that every handoff, and you know in this business there's the multiple functions that are along the path, you have to have seamless handoffs and cooperation all along the chain. If there's any breakdown in any one of those functions, from ideation to concept, to design, purchasing, engineering, manufacturing. So if you have any breakdown or conflict, you'll never move that fast. So the level of cooperation and the, you know, and again, when your back is against the wall, you can do things a lot better and a lot faster. So to me, it's a combination of those two things. You know, we were at the bottom. And then with the new energy level around Chrysler and the new structure and the new mindset, it's let's compete, let's win.
So is it going to be a big trough now of product until you can catch up another couple of years down the road here?
Oh, God.
Because,
no.
I mean, this was a tidal wave of product that just came out.
No, and a lot of, I mean, you know, the 300 is all new. The Charger's all new. The Durango and Grand Cherokee were all new. The rest of the 16, most of them were mid-cycle actions, refreshes.
But pretty significant ones.
Very
significant. In the case of the 300, yeah. Massive recycle. Yeah.
But and I don't know if you've seen our product plan in the out years. This is the tip of the iceberg. It's, you know, 11 is a big year. 12, we're going to continue. 13 is a huge year. It's the product development process is just in full force again. I say it's like we're drinking from a fire hose. I mean, there's so much. And I was just in the design office today, and it was just a nerve center of energy. I mean, there's so many projects going on right now. It's kind of fun.
How are you guys working with Fiat? I mean, you're taking platforms from them, right? There's got to be a lot of, you know, cross-ocean communication. Mm-hmm. And how's it all going together? And contrast it to what it was like with Daimler, too.
Well, first of all, there's actually real programs being worked on, right? I mean, the 500 is here, right? And like you said, 18 months ago, we were in bankruptcy. To me, the difference is not only we've identified programs, full vehicle programs, as well as powertrain applications, technology sharing. There's a roadmap to get us from, okay, this is an idea, go check it out, to actual implementation. So the difference to me is we are actually not talking, we are talking and doing. And the cooperation level is amazing. Whether it be in the engineering side, the design houses have to work together. They're going to be building vehicles for us. We're building vehicles for them. The business development folks, the folks who have to put the contracts together, are even working well together. So everyone along the chain knows that in order for us to be successful, to balance our portfolio, to gain synergies and lower our production costs, lower our variable costs, this is the way to do it. And we've got, you know, we're going to pick up powertrains from these guys because they're world-class in powertrain. The small vehicle architecture, you've heard Sergio talk about, you know, even folks like Maserati using our platform. So it's we're bringing over their commercial vans. It's everywhere we touch, we're finding that there's opportunities. So that's the big difference.
What's the culture change between having worked with Daimler and now with Fiat, German and Italians? Because it just seems to me that everybody in Chrysler is happier now with the new partner than they were with the prior one.
Well, yeah, we talked about cooperation. I think the cooperation level is certainly much higher. Internally, to me, the way it feels to me is we're going back a little bit to the old Chrysler days where we were a little more daring, right? We can study, and do research, and compile all kinds of books, and then make a decision, or we can get 80% of that, use our instincts and knowledge of the automobile industry, and run. And, I mean, so to me, that's the big difference. I think we were a lot more analytical before. Mm-hmm. We tried to do everything with data. Today we still use data, obviously. We still talk to the customer. We still analyze the competition. We still look at economic trends and social trends and globalization. But I think we're reacting so much faster because we think with 80% of the data we can make an educated decision.
I think Iacocca always said that if he had 75%, that was good enough for him.
I mean, are we going to make mistakes along the way? Sure. There's not a car company out there that doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, using all the data that's available to us, you know, even at the grassroots level and coming up with products that are going to work.
Looks to me that Chrysler isn't doing much with electric cars right now. It had been talking about that, you know, under Cerberus. Mm-hmm. But what are you guys' thoughts? Or is that you're going to let other car companies go chase the electric car market?
Well, I mean, my point of view on that, John, if you listen to the customer is telling you, I want great fuel economy and I want it to be affordable. I mean, that's what the masses are. So their unmet need is great fuel economy that's affordable. we don't hear a large voice out there that says it, that the way to get there is through electrification. So that's obviously one avenue, and we'll certainly study that as an alternative.
But you've got hybrids coming.
We
just announced some.
The our CEO did make an announcement about and
that know. Catch you by surprise, because I was with some other Chrysler people and they were like, oh, I guess we're doing a hybrid.
Yeah, well, it's you know, the fuel economy standards are as you know are getting very, very steep, and so there's many ways to attack it. I mean, we think one way to look at it, and there's no silver bullet, right? You're not seeing any OEM with one answer. But certainly there's a lot of room left in internal combustion engines.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, a lot.
You know, there's direct injection. There's turbocharging. You know, we're going to put – we've announced, you know, multi-speed transmissions, 8 and 9 speed transmissions. You know, we've looked at things like stop and start technology, active grille shutters, electric power steering, I mean, you know, low rolling resistance tires, aerodynamics. I mean, things that now that we're forced to –
And you just announced some program with the EPA or the
hydraulic hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting technology. I mean, it's worked on larger vehicles, but the concept, if you don't have to deal with a battery.
On delivery vehicles and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't have to deal with a battery, you could do
a
lot cheaper.
It's a large cost initially, and then any replacement cost is significant.
Right.
So.
But you still, I mean, the accumulator for a hydraulic hybrid still.
Well, you need an accumulator and you need a tank for the hydraulic fluid.
Yeah.
So there,
okay.
There's
packaging issues.
Packaging,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, I think if you saw the engine that they showed it on, I think it was the 2.4 Gemma engine, the contraption on the engine was pretty significant. And when Paolo Ferrara, our head of powertrain, has got the task that you got to make that smaller, right? We got to package this thing.
Yeah. Well, now, did the EPA come up with this like 8 years ago?
Yeah. Right.
And they've been trying to get a manufacturer to do it ever since?
Well, they worked with Ford and Eaton, and I think Eaton has taken it to commercial trucks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know is that it's in production. I know they've built things for, I think, UPS and others.
Oh, garbage trucks use it. I mean, these big, heavy vehicles that have, you know.
But it's in production and they're out there right now, hydraulic hybrids?
I believe they are.
Huh.
From what I did some internet research the other day and saw that, and it does look like it's out there.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, Peter, EPA's been pushing this technology for about 8 years. What I always heard, though, is that the pumps and accumulators are pretty noisy. And so that's another challenge, not just reduce the package, but, you know, people have pretty high standards in cars today, and they expect any kind of new technology to match that.
Well, I mean, I think one of the, you know, we were talking about electrification and fuel economy. This noise, think of diesel, right? Diesel is so widely accepted in Europe.
Yeah.
But the consumer is knowledgeable, right? They know that they're refined diesels. They're not dirty. They're not smelly. They're not noisy. Everything we've seen, it's a great fuel economy play in the United States, notwithstanding the cost of the emission systems. But the consumer perception is, they remember the old diesels of the 1980s, which were gasoline engines.
Yeah, they do, except for those who go out and buy the new ones. And, you know, if you look at the take rate on given models where they're offered, it's really impressive. Yeah. In fact, I think, if I remember right, didn't we report Volkswagen at its plant in Chattanooga where they're going to build the new Passat? They're going to shoot for like 80% diesel penetration with that car.
Yeah. And when we had the Grand Cherokee diesel up in Canada, we had about half the Grand Cherokee sold in Canada were diesels. They understood it. Right? So, another technology that we're going to look at as a fuel economy play.
How about what Fiat calls bi-fuel, where it runs on
the CNG,
compressed natural gas, or gasoline?
Yeah.
You know, it's not a one or the other. You can have both.
Right, you can do straight compressed natural gas, or you can do the biofuel, right? It'll run on gas. We're certainly looking at that. It makes a lot of sense in the fleet market because they have dedicated refueling sources. Yeah. And the infrastructure today doesn't exist for CNG. But these fleets, who you know, where the vehicles come back to a central point every night, can be refueled. Again, you have packaging challenges. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to package the tank, and so.
Fiat's done a pretty good job with that.
Yes, they have.
Offer it in even some of their small cars.
Yep. And if you look at countries, I believe like Venezuela,
uh-huh. They have an infrastructure for it.
Yeah. No. It's another technology that we're going to take a look at.
Hey, let's take another commercial break here for a moment, because we have to talk a little bit about Bridgestone, and especially Bridgestone America's tire operation. And Bridgestone, of course, is the world's largest tire company. It offers a full line of premium products, especially their Eco RFT run flat tire and the performance that it offers, low rolling resistance and the like. And that's why they say not only passion for excellence, but Bridgestone or nothing. So as you look forward as to where the American market is going as you do your product planning here, it seems to me that CAFE is going to require a lot more small cars to have to be built and sold. I know mm-hmm. the built part can happen, but what right. about the selling part? Do you see the American public really going to buy, you know, B and C class cars in the numbers that they need the automakers to meet CAFE?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. The new EPA regulations are footprint based. So if you, it's not precluding you from selling large vehicles, but you have to meet some pretty tough standards for those. Obviously, the smaller the vehicle, the easier it is just because of pure physics. But, I mean, you've seen it in other OEMs. You're seeing this whole explosion in the C segment. Right, the Verano, you know, Lexus is talking about bringing it. Lincoln's bringing a C segment, and so if you look demographically and economically, what's happening with the Great Recession that we just went through? People have taken a different look at their wealth. Right, there was a pretty shocking, stunting of people's their wealth. They're also living longer. So if you put those two things together. Is there? Could you draw up a scenario where somebody says, "Hey, as people age, they live longer. Their wealth is less. They have less to spend on a car."
So we'll all be riding around on our bikes.
Well, I didn't say we'll be riding around on our bikes, but we may not be able to afford as we get older the types of vehicles that we're accustomed to, and that's why maybe another reason why you're seeing more richly contented small cars because. They're used to the amenities that they had in a D segment and an E segment, and as they move from E to D and D to C and C to B, is there the expectation that those things like leather seats and sunroofs and nav systems are going to be there? So you could draw a scenario that says, hey, there could be this movement towards the smaller cars. Another thing is the millennial boom, right? Millennials. Biggest population segment in the country coming into not only car buying age, but they're starting the family formation stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know they don't have a lot of money. And there seem to be more environmentally conscious, at least at this stage in their life. Because one of the things we kick around here is, at least I do, I say, okay, millennials tell you that they're altruistic today, but what will they be when they're 35 and 40, right? I mean, think of the flower children and the hippies.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Right? Which I was, one of, and we're totally different now that as we progress through life. But in the short term, so is there going to be more B and C and D segment cars? Absolutely. I think I can paint a couple scenarios as we do our scenario planning that would show that could be happening.
One of the hottest segments in the market right now is compact crossovers, Ford Escape.
They showed the new
C-Max.
One.
The Vertrek, which it looked awesome.
Very slick.
One of my favorite vehicles at the show. But RAV4, CRV. Mm-hmm. You guys don't have anything really that goes up against that, except maybe in the Jeep line, right?
But the Jeep line, I mean, today in the D segment, we have Liberty. Mm-hmm. The Dodge Journey is bigger. I mean, that's 190 right. inches. I mean, that's more of a it's a narrow E. But D segment is the biggest segment in this country, right? Mm-hmm. So as we look at our future, I mean, I think Sergio has made the comment publicly, that's one of our big focal points, right? We have to be a volume player in C and D. And so, you know, he talked about the renewal of the Liberty as being one of our key product renewals.
I got to believe, though, that Dodge needs something like that as well.
Well, I mean, one of the things... going back to your question of what's the difference between Daimler and here is there, you're seeing a huge focus on brand, right? I mean, we appointed brand CEOs. We spun off the truck side of Dodge and created Ram. You've hopefully seen in the marketing the separate messaging. You're also going to see it in the product portfolio, right? As we create separate identities for these brands, we just can't just start populating them. Mm-hmm. We have to be true to the brand identity. So is as we look forward, is, you know, how do we, if Jeep is our SUV brand, do we covet that space for that? You know, Dodge has certainly opportunities. I mean, when we sit down with Ralph Gilles, who, you know, the CEO of Dodge, we've thrown all kinds of things against the wall to see what'll stick. Hmm. But yeah, we could, you know, there's the D segment. We've kind of quit calling them SUVs and crossovers. We just call them UVs, utility vehicles. I mean, what's mm-hmm. in fact we have debates as what's the difference? You know, is it a is the Explorer a crossover? Is the Durango a crossover?
I call them urban whatever vehicles. just get over it.
What's that acronym? Urban
UWVs.
UWVs.
We've seen Ford try. With the Transit Connect. Mm-hmm. We see Nissan coming out with these vans that they call NV, you know, yes. commercial vans. Yeah. There's been talk, I know Sergio has mentioned, bringing several Fiat commercial vehicles mm-hmm. along. I think the Doblo is one of them. Ducato is the other one.
Ducato, yep.
And is that still in the plan? Are you guys still looking at getting into the commercial end of the market with vans
Absolutely.
Like that?
I mean, when with the Ram brand now as our truck and commercial brand, I mean, the idea is to make it, you know, a full-line player in class 1 through 5, mm-hmm. right? I mean, right now we have Dakota, Ram pickup, Ram chassis cab, and you can argue the Dodge Grand Caravan cargo van. But a lot of people don't realize that Fiat is the world's third largest producer of commercial vehicles.
Huh. With Iveco.
When you combine Iveco and their Fiat Professional brand, I mean, they sell everything from... I mean, Iveco sells big over-the-road haulers,
right?
We want to leverage that, just like we did in our relationship with Daimler when we had Sprinter. And the initial starting point is going to be the Class 1 van, the Doblo, and then, you know, the Class 2 van with Ducato. So we see those as great opportunities. I mean, especially, we had great success with Sprinter. The formula is it works in Europe and it works here. It's I mean, a van that a contractor or a person can actually stand up in, right? I mean, we had validation through companies like UPS and FedEx and DHL, and those guys, when they buy fleet vehicles, they know what they're doing, right? And mm-hmm. so when we had that validation, it worked all the way down to the micro fleet guy, the guy who buys 1, 2, or 3.
Very interesting. Why don't we take another short commercial break here, and then we ought to get into some of the questions from the audience. But let's first talk about Dow Automotive's Aerify.com. And what we're talking about is a breakthrough particulate filter, especially for diesels. They call it Aerify. It offers high efficiency particulate filtration, but has low back pressure. You can downsize it for smaller packaging without compromising performance. And so you can meet regulatory issues at lower cost. Check it out at Dow Aerify. That's Dow, AERIFY.com. And we ought to get into rapid fire here. And again, we can't do the soundtrack, right?
Right.
But
do it yourself.
Okay, and we'll get into some of the calls. But first, we've got a number of questions here for you, Joe. Comment from Cop Car Lover. Ask him if they're ever going to make another Dodge St. Regis.
Well, Cop Car Lover, I think if we sat down and talked to Ralph as the head of the Dodge brand, I don't think that the St. Regis would be in the cards. It doesn't fit the brand identity anymore.
Okay, Tim wants to know, what's the future of the Dodge brand?
Oh, I think the future of the Dodge brand is very bright. I mean, first of all, it's going to receive the first vehicle off the common Fiat Chrysler architecture when we bring out this C-segment sedan about a year from now. So if you looked at the product plans we laid out, and Dodge is our volume brand. It also is a brand that can connect across from a millennial group to a baby boomer. It's got passion, it's got value. I think there are still driving enthusiasts out there, which I think is what the Dodge brand wants to connect to. So we see a bright future for Dodge, and Ralph's got the passion to help deliver that.
J.D. Clough says, why didn't Chrysler bring the 200C out with the new Pentastar V6 instead of redoing the Sebring model?
You mean why didn't we do a C version of the 200? That's an interesting concept. As we look at the family in the Chrysler brand, it is something that we've been discussing very seriously with Olivier Francois. You're thinking of the 200 concept car.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Well, it was a stunningly good-looking car, I thought.
The 200 concept was a rear-wheel drive.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was rear-wheel drive architecture. So
that was not going to happen.
Well, the D sedan segment is the largest segment in the country, and we need a volume player there right now. Will we ever bring out a rear drive D? I don't know. Something we can kick around.
Oh,
sounds intriguing.
That sure does. Timothy Rodriguez wants to know, what will the 2012 Jeep Wrangler look like? Chrysler's five-year plan reveals there will be significant exterior changes.
Well, like we're going to tell you. Like Joe is going to sit here and say, well...
I can tell you, Tim, what we did announce is that we are going to put the Pentastar V6 in there next year.
In the Wrangler?
Yeah. Actually, it comes in this summer.
Oh, really?
The new Pentastar comes in this summer into the Wrangler.
Okay. And is he right? Significant exterior changes?
I don't remember making that announcement because I was the guy who delivered the five-year plan. We did say we were making powertrain changes.
Dale Leonard from Lakewood, Ohio, wants to know if Chrysler ever has plans to bring back the Power Wagon.
Well, Leonard, I don't know if you're aware that we do offer the Ram 2500 heavy-duty pickup in a Power Wagon version today. So it has sway bar disconnect and locking front and rear axles, and it is badged Power Wagon. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you're referring to, you can go onto the Ram Truck website, find it today, and go out to your local dealer and buy it. It exists today.
That's great. Let's take a phone call here. So, Ben, let's see if we can make this happen.
Hey. Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. You know, I'm hoping you guys can settle a bet for me. Is it more accurate to say that the new Grand Cherokee is based on the new Mercedes ML architecture, or that the Mercedes ML is based on the new Jeep architecture? You know, it's my understanding that Chrysler actually took the lead on this project, and I just think they should get the credit where credit is due for a great job. Thanks.
Yeah.
Is it Jeff?
Jeff.
Yeah. I hate to tell you this, but I think it's more that the Grand Cherokee is built off of the ML platform. We did obviously do all the engineering work over here to make it a Jeep. So while the basic architecture is based off of ML, obviously we had to do modifications to make it a Grand Cherokee. So,
but you are out first with that platform, is that right? Or is the ML out ahead of you on that?
I thought the ML was out ahead of
us. Okay. Yeah. Mike DeWant D. White wants to know, what can you tell us about Chrysler's small car plans for calendar 2012?
What I can tell you, Mike, is that if you go to ChryslerGroupLLC.com and you pull up our five-year product plan, everything that we show in there, we are on track to deliver related. So 2012, the things that have been announced are that we're going to bring the C sedan for Dodge, which is going to be based off of this new platform from Fiat. We've talked about, and we're going to deliver some life cycle actions on the Fiat 500. So the battery electric Fiat 500 comes out in 2012.
And the Abarth version.
The Abarth version will also be out. But those plans are, if you go to that website, there's a whole detail by brand of what's coming out. And it'll actually take you not only through calendar 12, it'll take you through calendar 14.
That's pretty good to know. Jim Haynes, would like to know. He's got one about Bridgestone Firestone, asking why would they want to leave IndyCar now after spending all kinds of money with little return, da-da-da. You know, that's how it happens in racing. You know, car companies and supplier companies come and go in it, and I guess that's I don't know, unless you've got a better answer than I do, Peter.
It's just the way it goes.
And it's like, you know, hopefully at some point they'll be back.
Yeah.
Okay, Todd has a question for you, Joe. Taking into account future safety and fuel economy regulations, will the next Wrangler redesign still be able to maintain fully removable doors, optional half doors, and removable tops? Is it possible to improve side impact scores while maintaining these features?
Todd, I can tell you this. All those things that you've just articulated are at the core of what makes Wrangler Wrangler. And I think it's been key to the success of that product, not only in a two-door version, but in the four-door version. So we will do everything that is, you know, engineering and engineeringly possible and done with the laws of physics. Obviously, we have to comply with regulation, but those are the things that, that we will, you know, we hold sacrosanct when it comes to Wrangler. So the renewal is a ways out there, but we would do everything we can to keep all those features.
That's a good question, though, if, you know, vis-a-vis side impact regulations.
Well, there's great things like airbags, and our engineers have done a good job so far. So,
do we have another question there, a phoner?
We do.
Okay, well, let's get to another question here. Brian says, if rumors are correct in saying that a new C-segment Dodge will come by the end of the year as a 2012, will we see it by Chicago or New York, as in Chicago or New York auto shows, or is the 90-day rule still in effect?
Brian, I can only tell you this. The vehicle is actually coming about a year from now, so it's early 2012. When we are going to reveal it to the public is not under my purview, but my guess is, if I were to guess, I would say the 90-day rule is still in effect.
What's the 90-day rule?
We're if you've noticed lately, we've really timed the public reveal of our products very close to their production launches, rather
within
than
90 days.
Yes, Brian, you're calling it the 90-day rule. It would be very close.
I like that rule, actually. You know, Peter and I have talked about this. You know, imagine if the Chevy Volt had only just come out in the last 6 months or something. People would be knocked out, more knocked out than having learned about it over a three-year period. George from Brooklyn says, what does John think of the new Passat? Well, I'm glad they told me that it was the new Passat, because I couldn't tell the difference from the Jetta. I'll have to drive it. But, I mean, I thought the two were surprisingly similar-looking cars.
Blantastic.
Glenn wants to know, did anyone sit in a Fiat 500 yet? I was wondering how much room was inside up front. We've got one parked behind us right here in the studio. But it's got pretty good room up front. In fact, one of the journalists on the trip that I was just with is really big guy. He's got to be 6'6", 6'7". And he said he was able to sit upright very comfortably in the car as long as it didn't have a sunroof. If it had a sunroof, no. Then his head was up against it. But I'm talking about a big dude. The back seat's a tight fit.
Yeah.
It's a real tight fit back there. There's not even enough headroom for me. So, but up front, not bad at all. Most people will fit in there very comfortably. Comment from George from Brooklyn. Fully loaded cruise or base Verano? I don't know. I always like fully loaded stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say cruise in that case. Ben, let's bring in another call here then.
Hey, John, Rick from San Diego. Hey, Mr. Lutz mentioned 2 weeks ago how proud of the LH cars from Chrysler. Do they plan on making anything else, a front-wheel drive? I guess it would be a D class vehicle. And
it's
class to drive, a little lack of refinement, but I think they could make a comeback with a vehicle in that class. Any plans on that for those cars? Thanks.
Thanks. I was breaking up a little bit, but I think the gist of it was anything like the LH platform.
Well, the LH platform was a front-wheel drive, you know, E-size sedan. I mean, we just renewed the 300 and Charger off their rear-wheel drive architecture. So those obviously are going to have a normal life cycle, and because we've invested a significant amount of money into doing that.
And it shows.
And we've had in the past, I mean, at its high point, we sell 150,000 300s. Almost. So I think that's, for the short term at least, Rick, that's where our money is being bet. So,
let's see. Scotty in Cleveland says, what became of the Demon concept?
The Demon was the two-seater. It preceded Copperhead.
You're right.
Right? It was the two-seater. We did a study a while back on what we called the affordable sports car. You know, and I think it probably saw in the market, you saw the Saturn Sky and the
Solstice.
The Solstice.
Solstice.
Those cars, Scott, are they're heavily dependent on the economic condition of the day because they tend to be rewards cars, right? You buy them, it may not be your main driver. So right now, I think if you look at our portfolio, we're in that crawl, walk, run phase, and eventually when we have limited capital, those things are still on the drawing board, but right now it's getting back to health and making money.
Yeah, but I could see a few years down the road, it'd make a lot of sense for the Dodge brand to have a real nice, small, light, live performance vehicle.
Yep, agree.
Let's see, Jim wants to know, how do Mr. Veltri's designers plan to address Chrysler's weight problem?
Well, I don't know if you saw the press last week, but Sergio was talking about how he dropped 30 pounds by cutting out carbohydrates. Maybe we'll do that. No, there's a number of ways we're looking at it, and it's all the component system. I mean, every component system of the vehicle is being looked at, right? Powertrain, chassis, body, interior, electrical. Certainly... you'd look at things like high-strength steels, composites. Even on wheels, aluminum wheels weigh less than steel wheels. So the challenge is, as we find ways to take weight out of the vehicle, there are things that are driving weight into the vehicle. There's more and more features that customers are asking for, number one. So things like dual-pane sunroofs, which they happen to like, or you want heated steering wheels and you want power-folding seats, those add weight, number one. And number two, regulatory actions add weight, right? As we have to make the car safer, some of it involves structure. So the rollover standards are much higher, the side pole impact standards. I mean, so those challenges we have to in fact, we had a meeting today on our DSUV renewal. How can we take some weight out, right? You have to make some trade-offs. But every component system is looked at.
Huh. Let's see. Alan Fincher wants to know, when will we start seeing the 6.4-liter SRT Chrysler Jeep and Dodge vehicles? Will they come with a choice of 8-speed automatics or 6-speed manuals?
Well, Alan, I don't know if you've seen the new Challenger 3. It's called the Challenger SRT-8392. But if you convert 392 cubic inches, it is the 6.4 liter engine. So that vehicle is out there today.
I've driven the car, too. Yeah. I got to drive it at Infineon Raceway, and it was awesome.
Yeah. And it does come with a manual transmission, and as we bring into our plans to bring in the rear-wheel drive 8-speed transmission, that will certainly be an opportunity for that vehicle.
When do we see the 9-speed front-wheel drive ones?
Oh, John. Now you put me out of this.
Okay. Then I'm not going to push it because, you know, you guys have announced a lot, so I don't know what you've announced and what you haven't announced.
We have not announced
that. Okay, you haven't announced that one. Joseph wants to know, wrapping up the auto show, can you guys comment on Sergio Marchionne's long-term make-or-break strategy regarding engines? Fiat is planning a future of diesel and CNG, no EV at all. Since planet Earth is bursting with natural gas, I think he's probably right.
We just talked about that.
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like you're all that keen on CNG for the U.S. market.
We think it satisfies the need of getting better, you know, fuel economy. It's just a matter of infrastructure, and if you can solve the infrastructure problem,
call T. Boone Pickens.
Yes.
And make it happen. Here's one that I love. Could you please ask Joe Veltri a question that many people in Australia want an answer to? When are Jeep going to build a Wrangler Rubicon CRD turbo diesel for Australia? We are currently the largest Wrangler market outside of the U.S. Is that true?
I don't know that for a fact.
That's interesting. And there's a huge demand for this configuration of Wrangler. We currently only have the diesel in the sport version as well as the 3.8 V6, and that comes from Ian Fletcher in Australia.
Ian, the only thing I can think of is that we somehow aren't able to package certain things, you know, with a Rubicon where you get the front and the rear axle lockers and the other things. That's the only thing. I can take a look at it. I didn't know we didn't offer it in the Rubicon model.
Yeah, but a turbo diesel and a Wrangler, that would be awesome.
Oh, sure. All the low-end torque for off-roading and the fuel economy and the range.
Ben, do you want to try another phone one here? I know that last one broke up, but...
John Rick from San Diego. Yeah, on my previous call, the second question was about a Dodge Neon vehicle, competitor to the Civic and whatnot. The original Neon was a great driving car. Any plans for Chrysler to re-enter that market? Thanks.
Well, Rick, we do have a plan, and it materializes about a year from now when Dodge will what we've been calling the C sedan is really the Neon was a C segment sedan. So we have the vehicle. Obviously, it's fairly far along in its development if it's going to be in production in 12 months. So you'll probably be able to go to a Dodge. You'll probably see it posted in, you know, latter part of this year, and you'll probably be able to go to order one in December.
It's pretty good. Well, this is probably a good time to wrap up the show, but Joe Veltri, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
All about
Joe,
what's going on.
Great to see you.
Nice to see you.
Peter, always good seeing you as well.
John, another week.
Another week, that's right. So I'm going to go to our commercial message now and thank our sponsors again. Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze, get used to more. And Dow Automotive Systems, innovations for clean powertrain solutions. And want to remind everybody, remember you can friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/AutoLineDetroit. Check us out at twitter.com/AutoLine. Definitely go to AutoExtremist.com. Or follow Peter at twitter.com/AutoExtremist. And what was that website you mentioned? Chrysler LLC?
ChryslerGroupLLC.com.
And then you got
that's our corporate website. Our whole five-year plan is out there.
So that's good to know.
You can find it.
Remember, you can get us on Stitcher, on your smartphone, or BlackBerry. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in.